to turn around. All our hopes have come to be. And people gather around. They are all they can bring. And nobody knows that. A hundred little songs sing. The revolution starts now.
This is Steve Earle, and you're listening to The Revolution Starts Now on Air America Radio, and we are the music show on Sunday night. And the cool thing about having your own radio show is you can have people come on, and we have all kinds of people. We have musicians, and we have writers, and we have actors, and sometimes I get to have people do all those kinds of things, and they're also my friends. Mark Jacobson is here tonight, author, journalist, and a real journalist, which is something that's hard to find
out. Real one.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, you know,
I have a card to prove it.
To this day, I'm brokenhearted because I lost the cell phone. For months, I kept a message of you calling me from the floor of the Republican National Convention, and it was one of the most, you know, telling me, you said, I'm surrounded.
It was true,
they're,
too.
They're everywhere. It was pretty amazing.
There I was, and there they were. And they were everywhere.
Yeah. They were. That was a weird. I was here for that whole month, but you were a lot closer to the belly of the beast than I was.
I think I was masticated. I've been able to reconstitute myself.
Some people. I think we all were to some extent. But this is about music, and the first track you brought in tonight is Berry Gordy wrote this song.
Berry Gordy is the author of this song, and I like to make these CDs and I give names. It's like the reasons why we're all messed up or something like that. And this is, I mean, you can just play this song and then I rest my case totally.
Barrett Strong on Air America Radio, Money. Well, this is commercial radio.
Well, what more do you need to know than that song? I mean, really.
Do you know where that was recorded?
Well, Berry Gordy wrote it, and Barrett Strong was originally a Motown song, but I guess it was recorded in Detroit.
Yeah,
but Barrett Strong was passed from the That's his. He's a one-hit wonder.
Yeah.
But what a hit.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you know.
Yeah, you managed to do something here that I didn't think was possible. You managed to bring in a 3-minute and 57-second Ramones song, which I didn't think there. I never thought about. This is the longest Ramones record, I think, in the world.
Well, they got exceedingly long-winded, actually, near the end there, you know. But, I don't know, I saw them for the first time in 1974. It was one of their first gigs at CBGB's. It was really fantastic, you know. You go to this place, and at that time, Hilly was still under the impression that, like, you know, he was going to have this bluegrass club.
Right.
So
I tried to play that place with my bluegrass band because, you know, I think I was one of the few people that remembered that it was supposed to be a bluegrass club.
It still says Umfug and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know, we went in there, and it was like, I mean, everybody said the same thing, but it's really true. You walked out like 26 minutes later, and you were like, whoa.
Yeah, like, yeah. No. It may be the end of an era, too, because they are, you know, NYU is eating Lower Manhattan, and I think CBGB is finally in pretty serious trouble on keeping
well,
their lease.
That's a tearful thing to walk by where it says Joey Ramone Street, even though it's nice they made a street after him. But it's horrible that he had to die at 49. And also, you know, NYU, they just took over... well, not just, but even worse than CBGB's is like what they did on 14th Street in New York, where they used to have this pool hall called Julian's, which was like the single most beautifully sleazy pool hall with the lights slanting down through the musty kind of grimy windows and the old guy sitting there like, you know, what do you mean? You got no peanuts and popcorn, you know? It was like pool, you know, like just like in a Hustler.
Yeah,
and,
cool.
And then they knocked it down. They put up a dorm. They knocked down the Academy of Music and put up a dorm. They knocked down the Gramercy Fight Drum Gym and put up a dorm. I mean, at a certain point, I mean, how many students do you need? I mean, really?
Yes, what? Yeah. This is Bonzo Goes to Pittsburgh, the Ramones on Air America Radio.
Revolution Starts Now with Steve Earle on Air America Radio.
Steve Earle, and you're listening to The Revolution Starts Now on Air America Radio. My guest this week is Mark Jacobson, and that, you know, that Ramones song, it is maybe one of the only protest songs to come out of the 80s.
It's the only one I know about.
Well, there were others, but...
There might be others, but that's clearly the best. Actually, Johnny, it's a big schism between Joey and Johnny, because Johnny, who was a... I mean, when it says Bonzo Goes to Pittsburgh, the people that don't know... That refers to when Ronald Reagan, who played in a movie called Bonzo Goes, Bedtime for Bonzo.
Yeah, playing himself.
went to Pittsburgh, where all these people, where all these German soldiers who had killed all these people in the concentration camps were buried. And Joey Ramone didn't feel this was a good idea, but Johnny Ramone, who was a huge Reagan fan, didn't mind it. And he wanted the name of the song changed to My Brain Is Hanging Upside Down. So they never would announce the title of the song when they played it.
There wasn't always the most harmonious relationship in that particular band.
Could you be in a band for 15 years and then never speak to the other guy? How do you do that?
I saw that happen in a couple of bands. I mean, there were rumors that ZZ Top was like that for several years in the 70s. But they were owned by their manager, and so I think he was Bill Hamm. He's a bad guy. He'd have them killed if they didn't show up for the gig, so they stay together, and now they're friends again.
You got another guy with a long beard, right?
Yeah, right.
You're out of here.
it's pretty strange. You're actually the first person to bring this track in, and when I saw it on your playlist, it surprised me that, you know, doing a radio show on a left-wing radio station in New York that no one has brought in Grandmaster Flash yet.
That is,
especially this track.
I think that hip-hop really started here. I mean, not really, but kind of like that kind of whole Public Enemy, that whole thing where the people were... really trying to say something interesting. Starts here. Maybe ends here. I don't know.
It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. Broken glass everywhere. People on the stage, you know they just don't care. I can't take the smell, can't take the noise. Got no money to move out, I guess I got no choice. Rats in the front room, roaches in the back. Junkies in the alley with the baseball bat. I tried to get away, but I couldn't get far. Cause a man with a tow truck repossessed my car. Don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. Standing on the front stoop, hanging out the window, watching all the cars go by, roaring as the breezes blow. A crazy lady living in a bag, eating out of garbage pails, used to be a fag hag. Such a dance to tango, skipped the life and dangle. A silk on print to seem to lost her senses. Down at the peep show, watching all the creeps, so she can tell her stories to the girls back home. She went to the city and got so ditty, she had to get a pitch, she couldn't make it on her own. Don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. My brother's doing fast on my mother's TV. Says she watches too much, it's just not healthy. All my children in the daytime, Dallas at night. Can't even see the game or the Sugar Ray fight. The bill collectors, they ring my phone and scare my wife when I'm not home. Got a bum education, double-digit inflation. Can't take the train to the job, there's a strike at the station. Neon King Kong standing on my back, can't stop to turn around. Broke my sacroiliac, a mid-range migraine, cancer membrane. Sometimes I think I'm going insane, I swear I might hijack a plane. Don't push me, call, close.
close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. My son said, Daddy, I don't want to go to school because the teacher's a jerk. He must think I'm a fool and all the kids smoke reefer. I think it'd be cheaper if I just got a job, learn to be a street sweeper. I dance to the beat, chuck for my feet, wear a shirt and tie and run with the creeps because it's all about money. Ain't a damn thing funny. You got to have a con in this land of milk and honey. They pushed that girl in front of the train, took her to the doctor, sewed her arm on the game. Stabbed that man right in his heart. Gave him a transplant for a brand new start. I can't walk through the park cause it's crazy after dark. Keep my hand on my gun cause they got me on the run. I feel like an outlaw, broke my last glass jaw. Hear them say, you want some more? Living on a seesaw. Don't push me cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. Say what? It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. A child is born with no state of mind, blind to the ways of mankind. God is smiling on you, but he's frowning too, because only God knows what you'll go through. You'll grow in the ghetto, living second rate, and your eyes will sing a song, cause he hates the places you play and where you stay. Looks like one great big alleyway. You'll admire all the number book takers, thugs, pimps, and pushers, and the big money makers. Driving big cars, spending 20s and 10s, and you wanna grow up to be just like them. Smugglers, scramblers, burglars, gamblers, pickpocket peddlers, even panhandlers. You say I'm cool, I'm no fool, but then you wind up dropping out of high school. Now you're unemployed, all non-void, walking around like your pretty boy Floyd. Turned stick-up kid, but look what you done did. Got sent up for an 8-year bid. Now your manhood is took and you're a Maytag. Spend the next 2 years as an undercover fag, being used and abused to serve like hell, till one day you was found hung dead in a cell. It was plain to see that your life was lost. You was cold and your body swung back and forth. But now your eyes sing the sad, sad song of how you live so fast and die so young. So don't push me, cause I'm close to the
edge. This is The Revolution Starts Now on Air America Radio.
It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder.
What you do to stand in the rain, just body high to revolution starts now.
This is Steve Earle, and you're listening to The Revolution Starts Now on Air America Radio. My guest this week is my friend Mark Jacobson, who, you know, you've kind of showed me New York over the last few years. That's like, you know, every time I go for a walk in New York with you, you point out. So I remember we were walking in the West Village one day, and you said, "Hey, remember when those Weather Underground guys blew themselves up? It was right there." And we were standing in front of the house, this one stretch of new brick in the middle of a lot of old brick.
Well, you know, when you grew up here. When you grow up in a place, you know, you and it happens to be New York, you don't have to leave. You're already here. So, like, it's true. Well, that building, actually, that building's funny because, like, for some demented reason, the people that rebuilt that townhouse, which was blown to smithereens by a kind of a careless bomber who blew it up, they angled it out. So it's just a row of brownstones, which are flat against, except this building is tipped out.
So you can spot it from a block away.
In case you forgot, you remember.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's weird what people call attention to.
Where's the place we were walking one night, somewhere in that sort of, you know, nether region between Chinatown and the Lower East Side, when we looked up and you said, "Hey,
you can see those Buddhas."
The Buddhas on the second floor.
It's on Christie Street.
It's a Buddhist temple, like up on the second floor.
So
I think it's
a mobster Buddhist temple. I think it's a triad 14K Buddhist temple.
Yeah, it's pretty startling when it's dark. And the second floor is lit up, and they're gold, and it's a Buddhist temple, you know, up on the second floor, above one of the funkiest streets in New York.
Well, one of the things you have to really realize in New York City is that you want to look up until, like, because all the weird stuff is on the second floor.
Yeah.
All the gypsies, you know, the reader and advisors, and all that kind of stuff like that, it's always on the second floor, because you can't really afford the real estate on the ground floor.
Right.
So you walk up this kind of creaky stairs, and then you're into this bizarre world.
Well, that's the thing of it. My attitude, you know, Joseph Mitchell is one of my favorite writers and you know, a real journalist. And he was from North Carolina and moved here as a young man. And, you know, the old maxim was that you could always tell the tourists in New York because they were always walking around looking up. But Joe Mitchell moved here, lived here for the rest of his life, and he never stopped looking up. So he wrote about the architecture. He wrote about, you know, the Fulton Market and Grand Central Station and the Oysterman. And,
I mean, the sad thing is that actually in a lot of ways you don't have to look up as much as you used to because when Joe Mitchell first came here, they were still making interesting buildings which had, like, spires and weird stuff on the top of it. Because I think at one point people that created architecture in a city like New York felt that they wanted to attract the attention of God. So, you know, and so you could look what we can do.
Right.
And now they just make these flat buildings, you know, it's just a box to shove people into.
About space. Well, this is your New York set, so this is a good Twisted Sister and the Rascals.
See, but the thing is that this is really not New York necessarily. This is Long Island.
Yeah.
It's a different thing. Completely. Long Island is this part, like, beyond Queens. Like, you know, people that are not from New York, they have the airport, and then they have this rest of the place, which is called Long Island. And have you ever heard of Levittown? This is the sound of Levittown. In other words, like 50 million houses look exactly the same. And you go out there and there's a place to buy bagels and a laundromat in every single mini mall. And it just goes on and on and on as far as the eyes can see. Then you get to the Hamptons and that are rich people. But this is in the middle, these two bands. And they're both, the Young Rascals, I think, are brilliant. Twisted Sister is kind of a guilty pleasure, but it's fun.
Yeah.
The Rascals, or I guess the Young Rascals at that point, or is that before the...
Yeah, I think they were still young, yeah.
Yeah, that's one of those deals. That band always, you know, amazed me. I guess in Texas what we heard was, you know, I guess Good Lovin' like everybody else did. That mm-hmm. was the first single that was
Well, yeah, Good Lovin' and Groovin' came above the radar, I guess. But, see, growing up in New York, and actually where I was grew up in Queens... These guys were the top. I mean, they were
absolutely.
They were the top, and what little I used to play. We used to go out there. If they were playing beyond Exit 51 on the Long Island Expressway, it was going to be a hot gig. They were just. I mean, when you compare them and the Twisted Sisters, it's like, you know, this is like non-music and music, but we like it all. But the Young Rascals. I mean the Dino Danelli is like hard to beat as a rock and roll drummer.
No, they were a great, great band, and you know, like Felix Cavalier lives in Nashville, and mm-hmm. you know, I bump into him every once in a while, and kind of blew my mind when he popped up in Nashville, because the Rascals were, you know, they were a great band. They played really incredibly well, and they were kind of one of the first bands to start telling record labels, "No, I won't do that. No, I want to do this." And
well, they had a chippy attitude due to their ethnic heritage, I think. But they also did these unbelievable things, in which they refused to play unless half the bill was black for a while. They were like progressive.
Yeah. This is Air America Radio, a great place for a progressive rock band.
This is The Revolution Starts Now on Air America Radio.
This is Steve Earle, and you're listening to The Revolution Starts Now on Air America Radio. My guest this week is Mark Jacobson, and you have a new book.
Absolutely. I wouldn't come here without a new product to sell.
Yeah. This is a compilation of your journalism, of articles that you've essays that you've written over the last few years.
It's called The Teenage Hipster in the Modern World, From the Birth of Punk to the Land of Bush, 30 Years of Apocalyptic Journalism. Not all of it's apocalyptic, but there's at least 30 years.
All of it's journalism.
All of it's journalism. It took 30 years to write this book. Yeah. Anyhow, there's many pieces in here, some of which most people claim they've already read, but that shouldn't stop you from buying the book anyhow. Okay. It's a Grove Press book.
It's like a greatest hits.
It's like a greatest hits. Yeah, you know. I'm going to read a little bit. A lot of these pieces are about New York City, where I've lived, and we already talked about that. But there's also other ones in here, and I'm going to read a little bit from this piece called B is for Buddhas, D is for Death, Interview with a Theocrat, which is when I took a long trip to India to visit the Dalai Lama. One of the things that was very concerned me a lot was somebody told me, well, if you're going to see His Holiness, you got to bring him a present. So I said, well, you know, what does the Bodhisattva really need? I mean, what am I supposed to bring him? So I don't know. What I'm going to read now is a little bit about what I decided to bring him and his reaction to it. It was a thing to do, after all, to bring the Dalai Lama a present. But what? What do you bring the ocean of wisdom? What does a Bodhisattva really need? It was a vexing question, one that preoccupied me in my last days before beginning my journey to Dharamsala. Then, the afternoon before I left, strolling by a sporting goods store on 7th Avenue near my Brooklyn home, it came to me. There in the window, besides a Fat Farm sweatshirt and a Rockefeller jeans, was a replica of a cap once worn by the Dodgers, the beloved Brooklyn baseball team that broke the heart of the long-suffering borough when they moved from the sooty confines of Flatbush to the Los Angeles money fields. Seen through the streaked plate glass of the store window, sky blue with a snow-white bee embossed on the crown, this hat suddenly seemed the only possible present to carry 8,000 miles on planes, trains, and stuttering ambassador sedans to give to the Dalai Lama. As to why this was the perfect gift, I did not find out till I put the hat in His Holiness's large and pillowy hand. Actually, when I got there, he greeted me, Jacobson! how are you? It's like, you know, I just happen to be in the neighborhood, you know. Anyhow, he stood there regarding the mysterious object as I explained the item's origin and function in the context of the game of baseball, which was much like cricket, of course. I also touched on the deeper symbolic meaning of this particular hat, as opposed to the one that might be worn by faceless, relatively faceless ballplayers from Kansas City, Seattle, and any number of less storied franchises. This was the iconic cap worn by Reese Snyder and the grand avatar of nonviolence, Jackie Robinson. It was the lid of a team that had moved away, a relic of a bygone recent past, whose memory, both real and deeply sentimentalized, was still very much alive in the souls of their former homeland. The Dalai Lama emitted a stern and serious look, perhaps contemplating the arrangement of the white bases on a field of green in their correlation to the Diamond Cutter Sutra, one of the Buddha's most beloved teachings. Then, his large and tawny head exploding into a vast smile, he slapped the cap onto his close-cropped monk's head. B is for Buddhist, he rollicked, pointing to the letter on the hat, seemingly enchanted to have it covering his head. These Dodgers, they are exiles from their native country, like Tibetans. Well, yes, exactly right. Through whatever capacity of mind and study, His Holiness had cut through the morass of endless commentary and useless nostalgia to bring a snow-white bee on the sky-blue hat into the realm of the here and now, forging the connection between two apparently wholly unrelated existential situations, and perhaps more important from the purposes of our one-hour-only interview, cementing the bond between him and me. This was why he was the Dalai Lama, and everybody else was not.
Swamp Dog Synthetic World on Air America Radio. My guest this week has been Mark Jacobson. Say goodbye, Mark.
Thanks a lot. See you.